Let's open our Bibles now to the book of Acts, and we'll be looking at chapter 22, Acts chapter 22. Let's begin reading at verse 24, Acts chapter 22, beginning at verse 24. The chief captain commanded him, that's Paul, to be brought into the castle, and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know wherefore they cried so against him. And as they bound him with thongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned? When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, Take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. Then the chief captain came and said unto him, Tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, Yes. And the chief captain answered, With a great sum obtained I this freedom. And Paul said, I was freeborn. Then straightway they departed from him which should have examined him, and the chief captain also was afraid, after he knew that he was a Roman, and because he had bound him. On the morrow, because he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priests and all their council to appear and brought Paul down and set him before them. For just a minute, let's think about why Paul is here in this circumstance. He'd been arrested in the temple. He had been recognized by Asians, that is, Asian Jews who had seen and heard what he taught and what he preached in places where the Roman Empire had its holdings. And so they were able to identify him, and this created a great stir in the temple. Paul was bound with two chains. He asked to address the mob, that is, the Jewish mob that was gathered there at the temple. And when this request was granted by the chief captain, Claudius Lysias, then Paul simply made a defense of his ministry and of what he preached and of what he had done. He told them, I at one time persecuted this way, that is, the Christian way, and I persecuted it unto death. But then he said, I saw and I heard Jesus on the road to Damascus, and he asked me why I persecuted him. And Paul responded to that question by surrendering his will to God. And as he ends his defense before this mob, he quotes what Jesus said, I will send thee far hence unto the Gentiles. And when that word was said, that word Gentiles, and they gave him audience unto this word, that is, they listened to him, and evidently very quietly and attentively, until Paul made this statement, For I will send thee far hence unto the Gentiles. And when they heard that word Gentile, they then began to cast off their clothes and to throw dust into the air, and it seemed as though there was going to be a very serious riot. And that's when Claudius Lysias, along with others, came to arrest Paul or continue the procedure of taking him into the barracks. The word castle here really means the barracks of the soldiers, and they were going to detain him there. But when this terrible stir was created, it caused the chief captain to believe that there must be something Paul wasn't telling him, because as a Gentile, he simply couldn't understand why these Jews would become so upset, why they would bring upon themselves perhaps the wrath of the Roman Empire by rioting and by trying to pull Paul apart, literally kill him in the temple area. So he felt that Paul had not told him the entire truth. And he took him then, so the Bible tells us, to be examined by scourging. The word examine simply means to inquire strictly. That is, to get to the heart and soul of a matter. The word scourge here is simply a word that means a whip. So the chief captain said, take Paul. He's not going to tell us the truth until we scourge him, until we whip him. And then he'll tell us why these people are so upset about him and what he said. We need to get to the truth. So they bound Paul with thongs. And when they did this, Paul questioned the centurion by saying, is it lawful for you to scourge a man, that is a Roman, and uncondemned? This question that Paul asked, he knew the answer. He wasn't asking for information. He was well aware of the truthful answer, and the truthful answer was, of course it isn't lawful for you to scourge or to torture a man who is a Roman citizen, and it's wrong for you to bind him with thongs. You can be arrested, but you could not bind him without a hearing, without a preliminary hearing. And they had done none of these things. So Paul exercises his power of citizenship. Now the Bible tells us that the centurion, and this is a man who's a commander of 100 troops, he told the chief captain immediately, you need to be very careful. Take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. And Claudius Lysias asked Paul, are you a Roman? And Paul simply stated, very simply and very quietly, yes. You know, all through this, we've seen Paul with total and complete composure. We never see him angrily shouting out at the crowd or in any way seeming to lose his composure. Everything is quiet. Everything is answered very briefly. His requests are polite. And I think Paul demonstrates the kind of attitude that God's people ought to take in this kind of circumstance. Now, the question comes to the chief captain, how did this man become a citizen? How did he obtain his citizenship? And he asked him, or at least he tells Paul, I obtained my citizenship with a great sum, and you can add, of money. And citizenships were sold, but they were sold at a very high price, and they were sold by the emperors and rulers who wanted the money in order to use it to build roads or for defense, to raise an army, or perhaps to even enrich themselves. But it was a very serious thing to use the power of your office and sell citizenships. The Roman Senate never did accept that except as a dark blot on a senator's record, and he could be censured, he could be kicked out of the Senate because he did this to enrich himself. Now we're studying politics, and we'll see this word right shortly, because we're talking about politics right now. That is the process of what politics grants to those who are in its realm. This man evidently bought his citizenship with a rather large sum of money. So he asked Paul, or implies, how did you obtain your freedom? And Paul said, I was free-born. Now, the word that's translated freedom is the same word we get politics from, and it means the relation in which a citizen stands to the state, the condition or rights of a citizen. And Paul said, I was free-born. That is, I was born the son of a citizen, and therefore I am a citizen. Now, some have said that the city in which Paul was born, the city of Tarsus, was a colony. If you lived in a colony and under certain laws and rules and regulation, because you lived in that free city or colony, and Ephesus was a colony, then you had a majority of citizenship rights. But Tarsus was not a colony. It was what the Romans referred to as a suburb. So Paul's father or grandfather must have obtained freedom either by purchasing it or by some heroic act. Most men, not wealthy, not of the aristocracy, obtain their citizenship by going into military service and then by rising in the ranks to a certain level of command and then bringing about some great victory. And because of their leadership in the military, they then had citizenship bestowed upon them. Whether that happened with Paul or not, since he was a Jew, that is, his father and grandfather, we're really not sure. But Paul himself was born a citizen of the Roman Empire. And when you read Paul's statements in Romans and other places about his citizenship, he speaks of Rome as being his nation. That's how he refers to Rome, as being his nation. Paul had a very strong patriotic love for his country, and he understood the process of citizenship, and he understood what citizenship meant. And he used his citizenship to avoid being bound and to avoid being beaten. Now, these men responded immediately. The Bible tells us that straightway they departed from him, which should have examined him, and the chief captain was also afraid. Now remember, this is a man who commands about 1,000 troops or more. The chief captain does. The centurion is commanding 100 troops. There's about 4,000 troops stationed here in Jerusalem at this particular time, and these are very powerful and very high influential officers. Now notice that they're afraid. They have fear. And the reason they're afraid is because they've done a very serious thing. They didn't know the man was a citizen of the Roman Empire, and they've bound him, and they have arrested him, and they were on the verge of torturing him. That's what this last word, examined, in verse 29, is a word that means to torture. So they were right on the verge of torturing him, and it would have been as serious, perhaps even more serious, for these people to have bound Paul and tortured him without trial as it would have been for some of our law enforcement agencies to arrest a man, take him to the jailhouse, and to beat him without ever having a charge brought against him. You can get into serious trouble for that in law enforcement now. You can even be imprisoned because of it. So these people were filled with fear. They themselves could have lost their positions. They themselves could have been imprisoned. They could have even been put to death for doing what they were doing. So it's no wonder that they were filled with fear. And also, it's rather strange that this man, whom I admire, Claudius Lysias, because he seems to be a very just man and a very fair man, he says, let's take Paul and let's put him before the chief priests and all their council, and let's hear what Paul tells them. Let them examine him. And this is what we're going to look at. Paul before the council. You know, we've seen Paul in so many different circumstances, and now you're going to see him in a rather unique circumstance. But I want us to think about, for just a minute, our citizenship. You know, we're like Paul. We're citizens of a country. We're Christians, like Paul was a Christian. And it may be that we're hardly aware of our rights as a citizen. In fact, when I began to think about my rights as a citizen, I thought of the 10 amendments or the Bill of Rights, but those aren't the only rights we have. We have others, but they are the embodiment of what a citizen possesses in the way of rights here in the United States of America. Paul said, "I was born free." Now, that doesn't mean that his citizenship hadn't cost someone something. In fact, our citizenship has cost the most expensive price that can ever be paid for anything, and that's blood. That's what your rights right now, where you sit right now, what we do, what we're involved in, costs blood. It wasn't it just someone said, okay, this seems like a right thing to do. Sure, we'll extend to you people the opportunity of peaceful assembly, and we'll not make any laws that forbid people gathering in religious assembly. You know, that we'll not do that. We've thought about it. And that's not the way it happened at all. There was a struggle for centuries before the idea of freedom to worship, freedom of religion, guaranteed. There were times when people worshiped, but they worshiped at the goodwill of the monarch. They worshiped at the goodwill of a person who simply said, we'll not enforce the laws that exist against these people, because if they enforced the laws, there would have been persecution. Many times the Roman Empire simply did not enforce its own laws against the Christians and against proselytizing. They had very strict laws against proselytizing, but they didn't enforce them. Occasionally an emperor would come to power and he would enforce them, and that's when heavy persecution would rage against the people of God, and then perhaps he would die or be assassinated or be overthrown. The next emperor, he wouldn't enforce these laws and these rules. That's why there were periods of peace, relatively so, toward the church, and then periods of intense persecution. It just depended upon the whim of the ruler. And that's been so through many centuries of time. In fact, the right to worship, as you and I are involved in worship tonight, really came to pass with the American and with the United States of America. I know there was some toleration granted under the British system, a rather broad toleration, but you know, toleration isn't freedom. Now, Paul had rights under the Roman government, and we have rights under the Roman government. Now, these first 10 amendments to the Constitution are the result of tenacious and stubborn Baptist people who made up only a fraction of the population of the United States of America when the Constitution was ratified. Just a fraction of the people, maybe a 2 or 3% at the most of the population of the United States of America. And yet, they are so tenacious. They are so stubborn, if you please. They are so vocal that men who have been governors of Massachusetts and other populous strong states yield and accept and adopt, because they want the Constitution ratified. And the only way it's going to be ratified is if it is promised and guaranteed that upon its ratification, it be amended 10 times. That's never happened since. They've been amended occasionally, but never just that many amendments. Do you know what these rights are? I want to read them to you. Now, these are your rights. If you were in Paul's circumstance, or perhaps I should say, this is why you aren't in Paul's circumstance. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Wonder why that's the First Amendment to the Constitution. Deals with freedom of worship. I know it's because Baptist people insisted on it. Not because the politicians thought it was good publicity. Because the Baptist people were the ones who insisted that it be that way. Or the abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Article 3, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Now you say, well, what in the world, why that kind of a statement or amendment? Because the British, when they got to a certain place, if they were moving, that is, soldiers were moving about, and they came to a certain place, they just walked into the people's homes, demanded food, demanded lodging. They did not reimburse the people for it. Oftentimes they were very belligerent, and this became offensive to the citizens of the United States to have British troops quarter themselves in their home. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, their houses, their papers, their effects, against unreasonable searches and seizures. And that's what people were experiencing. They just come to the house, burst into the house, search for whatever they wanted to, and find it and use it as evidence. This can't be done unless warrants are issued and upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. You heard of taking the Fifth Amendment? That's really what this is. Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. You wonder why these people wrote these things in the Constitution, into these amendments? Because they'd had it happen to them. You say, where did this happen? In the United States, in this land. And this is the process. And these are the rights you have. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war, public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, or compelled in any way in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor to be deprived of life or liberty or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken in public use for public use without just compensation. 6, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial. Why was that there? Because people would be arrested, put in prison, and left there for 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, and they would never live to be put to trial. It was a way of getting around a trial. And so they put this in, a speedy and public trial, not a private, but a public trial, by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law. You couldn't arrest a man and then decide we'll put him over here in this district and we'll make this a district because everybody here believes he's guilty, and that way we can get a conviction. to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. You know, you see the movies or television programs where he has a right to have an attorney with him based on Article 6. Article 7, in suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. This simply means if you are accused of stealing something and that jury meets and pronounces you not guilty, then there may be a process of appeal, but if that isn't followed, then no other court can ever bring that charge against you again. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, notice that one. Cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. We have the grand jury indictment, and then we have the trial by jury in a particular district where we live. Now, there have been a lot of refinements through the years, but these are our basic rights. And this is what, whether you realize it or not, but this is exactly, there was no 10 amendments to the Roman law, but this is exactly where Paul stood as a citizen. You say, well, all of the people who lived in the Roman Empire, were they all citizens? No. A very small percentage of the population were citizens. That's why it was so treasured. Only the citizen. The slaves had no rights. Women had no rights. None of them came under this category, except a very few who had done some tremendous act for the state. But as far as voting is concerned in the Greeks, they just didn't have standing. That's why it's so unique in the United States that these are to all citizens. Now, cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. That's why people are not defaced, why they don't have their ears cut off or their tongue split. And the reason that this is put into the Constitution of the United States is because one man who was arrested for publishing a tract for the right of freedom of worship in England, Roger Williams, saw what happened to that man. First thing they did, they cut off one of his ears. Then they pillared him, that is, put him in a stocks. And then they beat him and took him to different places and put him in stocks and beat him as an object lesson. Then they cut off the other ear after this one had healed, and it was certain that he wouldn't die from the wound. And then after that, they put him in prison and left him, and then they waited till he recovered. Then they cut his tongue out, and then they placed him in ships where he would sail constantly, like the man without a country. This is cruel and unusual punishment, and these people had seen the reality of it. Obadiah Holmes and many others had been beaten because they were preachers of the gospel of Christ. They had no state license issued to them. And even in Virginia, Patrick Henry defended Baptist preachers because the charge against them was having preached the gospel of Jesus Christ. These people knew what they were doing. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, these are your rights as a citizen of the United States. Paul had rights as a citizen of the Roman Empire, and he used them in order to stay a time of torture, to be unbound. So it's not without reason that we can see Paul defend legitimate government. Paul makes that defense in his scriptures. Honor the king. Obey the authorities. These are the things that Paul writes. Even though he's been suffering a great deal at the hands of the Jews, yet he loves his citizenship and he loves his country. Our citizenship is worth a lot. You ought to be happy and proud that you have these rights and privileges. They don't extend to every citizen of the world, that's for sure. How long will it be before some of them are brought in question? Well, I think we've seen the beginning of that. I doubt seriously that right now that there's as much weight in our judicial system on the establishment of religion as there is the prohibition of the free exercise thereof. I really think that our judicial system, and particularly the Supreme Court, has strayed too far, and that they do prohibit in some ways free exercise of religion. I don't know how far that'll go, but I rather suspect one of these days God's people, and I'm talking about Baptist people here in the United States of America, are going to become more acquainted with these rights. I rather suspect one of these days there'll be a Baptist preacher in America in the same circumstances that Paul was here, and he's going to claim, wait a minute, I'm a citizen. I've got some rights. Just like Paul said, I'm a citizen, and I've got some rights. I don't know when it'll be, but I rather suspect if the Lord tarries his coming that it will happen. We need to know our rights. You need to know the history of your country. You need to know why these things have occurred. And I don't feel like I'm out of place telling you about these things from a pulpit, because we're citizens of two worlds, the world in which we live and the world wherein we shall live. We have two great and wonderful documents, one of them inspired of God, the Holy Bible, and the Constitution of the United States of America, the greatest document ever penned by human hand. It's not inspired, but it is a great document that gives us so much liberty and so much freedom that we could hardly comprehend it, having been freeborn. I know some of our men have defended it, the Constitution. You've sworn to defend it. You've gone and fought in an army that was raised to defend the peace of the world and consequently our own peace. It's not been without a tremendous price. I hope we can have a better understanding of our rights and certainly be more thankful for what we have as citizens. Let's stand together. We'll have an invitation hymn, and as we sing this, if you're not a Christian, I invite you to come and trust in Jesus Christ. If you're here and you've never been scripturally baptized, you've never perhaps moved your letter to a church here in Little Rock, and you'd like to do that, we give you that opportunity as we sing.